How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.
It's the Crossover Sports Illustrated's NBA show. Breaking down the latest news, rumors, and everything in between. Here's your host, Chris Mannix, Rohan Akhmi, and Chris Herring.
Welcome back to another episode of the Crossover Podcast. A very special episode today. Joining us on the show is a senior staff writer at The Ringer. He's the former co-host of the Open Floor Podcast, coming to us live from Jared Mencken's election party. It's Michael the Pod Pina. Mike, how's it going, buddy?
I'm so happy to be here. You know, time is a flat circle, Rohan. It just feels like we're just repeating where we were a year ago at this time. We're obviously going to get into it. Celtics Heat. Just an amazing time to be alive. I feel like you and I are in a much better place today than we were a year ago.
I texted you, I think, on Saturday, if the Celtics win, it's got to be time for us to pod again. But that was me hoping to put a reverse jinx out there. I was like, if I send this text to Mike, Boston will simply have to lose in embarrassing fashion now. And for about 13 minutes, for about 13 minutes on Sunday, it really looked like PJ Tucker and Tyrese Maxey were going to end Boston's season. Mike, there's obviously a ton we're going to get to on the show today. We're going to preview both conference finals series, talk about the biggest storylines, what we expect from those games. But first and foremost, let's start with what was probably the most important game of the playoffs so far. Game 7 in Boston, 76ers Celtics. You know, this was a good game for 27 minutes, 26 minutes. Really entertaining first half. Philly jumps out to a big lead kind of late in the first, early second. Boston storms back. And then in the third quarter, just goes on a complete blitz, raining down threes. Harden and Embiid, just two absolute no-shows from them. I wrote about it after the game, and I was like, I don't want to look back on this like 2 years from now and be like, oh man, I killed these guys. But now I'm reading it the next day, and I'm like, I didn't go in far enough on just how bad they were in this Game 7. Incredible Jason Tatum performance, 51 points to lead the Celtics back into the conference finals. Mike, take me through your experience watching that game.
I mean, you summed it up really well. From the start, I was texting some people during the game. I think I was ignoring your texts if you sent me any. But I thought that Boston's pick and roll defense would be key in this game against Harden and Embiid. The coverage was, I thought, executed extremely well early on, and you have to live with something against that action. And the Celtics, in my opinion, correctly chose to live with semi-contested or wide open threes from PJ Tucker. He hit a bunch early on. And then offensively, you know, it's really funny, like game sevens for the Celtics in recent history have these labels, like the Kelly Olynyk game against the Washington Wizards a few years ago, Grant Williams last year in this exact same spot at home, game seven against the Milwaukee Bucks, goes bananas from behind the three-point line because Mike Budenholzer just decided to leave him open. That was the strategy there. And in this game, it was way more traditional. It was the best player in Boston avenging what had been several slow starts in this series, having by far the best game of his entire career, 51 points on 28 shots, completely game unstoppable.
Game seven record.
All-time record, zero turnovers, 13 boards, five assists, two steals. He was everywhere doing everything. The Sixers threw everything. I mean, I started this like answer talking about the Embiid Harden pick and roll, but like on the other end, the Sixers had no defense whatsoever.
They were putting the MVP in a lot of pick and rolls on Sunday, Mike.
I thought I was watching Nikola Jokic. I just want to get that out of the way. I mean, goodness gracious. They did hunt him and had a ton of success, particularly the Tatum-Rob Williams pick and roll, which when we talk about the Heat series, I think we'll probably touch on that a little bit more, but that's been really, they've had a lot of success with that in this postseason, particularly over the last two games of this series. And yeah, I mean, I think that Embiid, is it fair to say, you know, I'm sure his health was a factor here. I don't want to get too much into that because when you have a game five like he did,
right,
it's like I kind of adopt what Jeff Van Gundy said.
After game five, everyone was talking about how great the knee looked.
Right. So are you hurt or are you not hurt? So, I mean, yeah, he did play with an injury that he said before the series should have put him out 4 to 6 weeks. And congrats to him for playing, for not sitting out this series. I think that that showed a lot of heart and guts. And he did perform, you know, by and large, exceptionally well on the defensive end, particularly as a rim protector throughout the series. But putting him in pick and roll was the strategy for the last few games, and they had a lot of success with it. And it didn't matter who you put on Tatum, Tobias Harris, Melton, Tucker.
Embiid was switching out onto him.
Exactly, which was like the ultimate desperation move. he was just cooking everybody. He was cooking everybody. He had the step back three going. That shot he hit at the end of the first half, where it looked like it was one of those sidestep threes that looks like a travel, but is just so fluid that it's just impossible to stop. Tobias Harris will be having nightmares about that possession for the rest of his life, probably. The Celtics were just amazing on both ends, and they had their best player to thank. And here we are. We're in the Eastern Conference Finals again.
I want to touch on the Conference Finals because there are a lot of questions there, and I don't want to get too deep into strategy on Philly-Boston now that it's done. I will say, I think, obviously, the starting lineup with Rob has been really good historically, and it's a group that they can and should go to. I was surprised that was the adjustment. All credit to Joe Mazzulla for making that one. I thought, and I think we're on the same page with this, I thought they tried to spread Philly out more than they did. Instead, they went, not necessarily went the other way, but they said, oh, we're going to focus more on cramping them defensively. And listen, I think we all have sometimes will make the mistake of not valuing enough what the opponent does to take away great players in big games. Boston deserves a lot of credit for how well they defended the Harden Embiid pick and roll, the way Al Horford was defending Embiid when he was rolling, the way Horford just individually defended Embiid when Embiid had the ball on the elbow. And I think you and I are both, you know, hey, run a good process and kind of live with the results. People who watch basketball, you know what I mean? Like, but at some point you got to deliver. At some point you just have to be a great player who plays great in a big game. At some point you just have to do what Jason Tatum did in game seven. At some point you have to do what Jimmy Butler did in round one or what Nikola Jokic did throughout the second round. So Harden had those two big 40-point games, 45 and 42 in games one and four, I believe. 87 points in those two games. 67 points in the other five games in this series. Just which time on Sunday when he got by his defender and then immediately passed it to the corner instead of looking at the rim was your favorite? Because it happened six or seven times. Embiid, I thought, listen, Al Horford is really good defensively and deserves a ton of credit for his individual defense on Embiid. But bro, like, if you're the MVP, I'm sorry. Like, you gotta figure it out. The fact is, they're still so worried about him getting doubled in the post. And you saw, like, times where he got doubled and was flustered and turned the ball over. Him and Harden also combined for 9 turnovers on Sunday. More turnovers than field goals. You never worry about giving... We're going to turn this into an Embiid-Jokic thing. There's just no avoiding it because of just how funny it's been so far. But there's no spot on the floor for Giannis or Jokic where you're nervous about giving them the ball because you think they're going to turn it over immediately. Embiid, they keep him around the elbow where Horford can do a better job defending him because I don't think they trust him. You know, even though his post-ups went up throughout the back half of the series, you can tell they don't trust him enough on the block when those doubles come. And I just thought it was such a disappointing performance from Harden and Embiid. Like, yeah, at some point, your best players just have to play better, and they were so bad.
They were terrible. I mean, Embiid started this game looking... I mean, it's the first few possessions, he looked terrible, right? And then he started to get it going. He had that and-one over Horford, just, like, which barreling through nice, him off yeah. balance. And at that point, it's just like, when I go back to, oh, he looked healthy or he looked injured, like, I just don't care. It's just like he's hitting ridiculous shots, and every time Jalen Brown goes into the paint.
Smart flop, yeah.
Well, yeah, that I was about to say that play where he steps on Marcus Smart and Marcus Smart gets called for a foul. Haven't seen that one before. But
you haven't seen a player lying in the opponent's in the shooter's landing zone before?
Not in the paint. I haven't seen a foul like that.
I got multiple texts from people who were like, that was my favorite sequence of the playoffs. Marcus Smart's bullshit finally getting called out by the refs.
Is that the definition of heat culture? Texting Rohan when Marcus Smart flops? Is that what we boiled down to?
I know you were probably polishing a second Defensive Player of the Year trophy for Smart when you saw him take that flop. But
that's a charge.
That was a step toward progress in America. Smart getting called for the foul there.
But I will say, when he lands, he touches his knee, and he didn't really look the same after that play. I don't know if he hurt himself on that one or what, but yeah, I thought that generally, like Embiid, you talk about like the, it's like I won't bring up Jokic. I want to bring up Jokic so bad. I'm just like, this is the forum for me to do it. I feel like this is a safe space. But just like the big separator between these two players for me is like selflessness, vision, inability to make your teammates better. And you can see when you watch Embiid play, like, and he said this, like, he wants to score. He's a scorer. That's how he views himself. And when the Celtics took away those, like, pick into a short roll jumpers after game, I think in game 5, that's when he really was eating with that, and they took it away in game 6 and 7. Like, the isolation game just wasn't there. I mean, they started in the first half of this game, Doc Rivers, who I thought, like, was fine. I think a lot of the criticism about him is more, like, narrative-based, and that's fine, and the results are the results, so I get it.
Okay, but his record in, like, closeout games being what it is insane.
100%. The results are the results. But I just thought that he was doing a lot of interesting things to try to free Embiid up early. Like, Embiid was basically playing some point. Mm-hmm. Embiid was operating in a lot of space at the top of the key, so you couldn't double him. And he just wasn't getting it done at all. And he had a little bit of tunnel vision. That's when the turnovers started happening. He wasn't handling double teams great. And when you are predictable offensively, which is the exact opposite of what Nikola Jokic is, you're pretty easy or relatively easy to stop. And you're reverted to these really difficult jumpers, these fallaways. And
how many times did Al Horford block him in the series? 5?
He had the big block on the fallaway jumper in this game. And then in game, what was it, game 6?
He had 3 in the fourth quarter?
Game 4 down the end, I believe, or game 5 down the end. I struggle with this stuff.
They're all blurred out, yeah.
The one where Harden hit the big corner 3,
right,
when Embiid was kind of flailing at the end. Yeah. Embiid was flailing at the end of that game. And I thought that Horford was completely dominating him in that one-on-one matchup. I don't know if he was exhausted or what it was, but you got to give credit to Horford also in that matchup. But yeah, I thought that, you know, they just kind of stopped playing basketball in the third quarter. They had like the over and back violation. Just like, what are you guys doing? A lot of sloppy turnovers, not a lot of focus, flailing around, looking for whistles. I thought it was just, you know, personally, I'm not sure if like the result of this game will be finalized in the eyes of the NBA because the non-calls that, you know, we know that the Sixers lead
that's when I knew they were getting boat raced in this game. And yeah. That's when I knew they were losing by 30. When, the fact that they had to, that Harden is like, I'm the most disadvantaged player in the league when it comes to fouls. That's a fact. It's like, dude.
I heard I was covering the Nets Sixers series in the first round, and
they're just like, making stuff up. They're just, what are you talking about?
It's tough. It's the total lack of accountability. Like, you lost game six at home because you missed a ton of threes. How about that? You had a bunch of wide open threes. You right. missed them. Your offensive rating in, I forget what games in this series, but 6 and 7 in particular were like two of the five worst that you had all season long. That's not the referee's fault. Can we like stop this, please? You just didn't play well enough against a team that made an adjustment that you could not counter. That's what it was.
It's not like the refs were taking off points off the board because of phantom shot clock violations or clearly missing that a player's foot wasn't on the three-point line.
Exactly.
It's not the typical help Boston's been getting in the playoffs so far over the last couple of years. I just want to shout out to my guy Prison Mike, who is one of my Twitter followers and is constantly getting on my case about how I wanted Jokic to win MVP last year. You know, constantly making jokes at Jokic's expense in my mentions, etc. I genuinely love Prison Mike. I believe he is an Australian Sixers fan. He's great, solid dude who tweeted at me yesterday after I said Jokic wouldn't go out like this. He said, as a lifelong Sixers fan, Jokic is clearly the more reliable and superior player overall. Glad Embiid got his MVP, but this is pathetic. That's how bad the Sixers were on Sunday. They broke their fans. They broke some of their greatest defenders. Just real. That's how depressing it was. I believe it was Kyle Newbeck who wrote for the Philly Voice that it was a legendary choke job. It was a great column. That was one of the more embarrassing playoff games I've seen from big play. It's like, we don't see that often anymore. Like, people used to make such a big deal about LeBron, even though he had like a ton of great big games early in his career. Like, it's been a long time since we've seen, I guess with Harden, we're used to it, but like, we usually the stars aren't that bad anymore. That was a great throwback. Oh, this great player was absolute ass in this big game. So I'm excited to see what they do in the offseason. We'll have plenty of time to get there. Let's get into the conference finals and let's build off this Celtics win going into their third conference finals with the Miami Heat in the last 4 years. They played in 2020. They played last year, the 2020 series, Miami in 6, Boston in 7 last year. These teams are very, very, very similar to what they were last year. Obviously, Boston is the addition of Malcolm Brogdon, but just about everybody else in their rotation played in this series last year. The Heat, PJ Tucker no longer there. Caleb Martin, who was kind of out of the playoff rotation last year, big difference for them this year. They have Kevin Love, who's currently starting, although we'll get to that.
Mm-hmm.
Let me start here. Who do you think Boston starts in this series?
I think that's a really good question. I'm writing a preview right now of the series, and I think I would guess that they will stay big. I would guess that they would ride the momentum off of the success that they had in the last two games in the series. Start Rob Williams, who looks great, and really flex your defensive muscles, which is something that Joe Mazzulla has not really wanted to do for this entire season. If you remember the beginning of the second round series, even against the Sixers, like Sam Hauser was getting minutes.
Yeah.
He was like, he just really prioritizes spacing. He really prioritizes and loves and adores three-point shooting.
Maybe he was just reading all the Sam Hauser fluff pieces that the Boston Media Mafia was putting out this year and just felt compelled to get him in there for some second-round minutes, you know?
Maybe. That's a great point by you. I have no rebuttal. but if you even look back at... I've been just kind of studying real quick this morning last year's series because, as you said, there's so many similar characters and familiar faces from that series to this series. And that five-man unit, the big one with Rob and Horford in the front court, was really bad in that series last year. Just didn't have a lot of success.
Which is surprising because I think my memory of it is how much Rob affected the Heat's offense. Particularly when they were playing Tucker, my memories of Rob in that series were him being so good because he was hanging out in the paint. And even if Tucker had a wide open corner three, it felt like Rob Williams was blocking it, even though he was only halfway between the paint and 3-point line. So that's an interesting, stat to hear, but continue.
It's a very small sample, but right. It is what it is. And I do not think that, as you said, like Kevin Love, I think the Kevin Love question will be really interesting. Kevin Love is essentially, Kevin Love's offensively has actually been a lot better, particularly in that Knicks series, than PJ Tucker can be at this stage in his career.
Right. I mean,
Kevin Love was doing a lot of things that were like,
yeah, and they would get like the random post-ups with him. He'd go for 2-pointers as well. Like, yeah, no, really he was important for them.
He was driving closeouts, making plays off the bounce. Like, he was really good for them.
Yeah.
And he obviously went cold behind the 3-point line after exploding in the first round. But he's interesting because I don't think you can necessarily treat him like you can PJ Tucker. I also think that as good as Caleb Martin has played and as great as Miami's offense has been with Caleb Martin on the floor, that the Celtics would be more comfortable, if that makes sense. Maybe I'm just speaking like what I would be more comfortable with, but letting Rob roam off of Caleb as opposed to Kevin Love. And
certainly,
I think that it's just a really interesting dilemma for Eric Spoelstra because he only has so many doors he can open and options he can go to with this roster with a lot of injuries to key players. And like Kevin Love gives Boston another matchup to just hunt mercilessly. Mm-hmm. And you can't, I mean, Kevin Love will show and recover and
it all worked well enough against the Knicks, who didn't have the outside shooting to make Miami pay when they got caught in rotation. That's not going to be the same for Boston.
Right. New York shot 29.9% from behind the 3-point line in that series, which was the worst in the conference semifinals.
And that doesn't even take into account the number of wide open looks they had that they decided not to take.
Right. I just think Boston creates a lot of different issues. Even when they're big, they still have a lot of Al Horford, elite shooter, he'll tell you that. Tatum, Jaylen, of course. Marcus Smart has been hitting big shots throughout the past few postseasons. And then they have the option, obviously, to go small with Brogdon, with Derek White. I think, like, to me, one of the really fascinating questions in this series is Grant Williams, because Mazzulla, for whatever reason, just will not play him. And he averaged 30 minutes a game in last year's conference finals. He was huge. He knows Bam Adebayo going back to high school. We talked about this last year, I'm pretty sure you and I. And Grant is extremely comfortable in that matchup. He's extremely comfortable starting on Jimmy, switching the pick and roll, or vice versa, and neutralizing it. And he can still hit threes. So I don't know how Mazzulla is going to deal with that. I think that Bam can be a handful. When he's aggressive offensively looking to score. Jimmy is obviously...
He was up and down in the Celtics series last year. I think he traded off single-digit scoring games with double-digit scoring games. But he also had like two of the best playoff performances of his life in that series.
Yeah, yeah. He was inconsistent, but the highs
were high.
Breathtaking. And so, like, it'll just be really interesting to see also... If Grant plays, will Spo ever play lineups that don't have Jimmy and Bam on the court, which is something that he did in the second round a little bit? I just think like the margins are really, really narrow against the Celtics team, because even if you go zone, which the Knicks had a lot of success against Miami's zone, like going zone against the Celtics is just... If, I mean, you can watch what the Sixers did when the Sixers went zone. Just like Boston has so much shooting, so much passing, so much experience dealing with that, be it the 1-3-1, the 2-3, it doesn't really matter. I don't know. I just don't know. Like, I'm flustered in thinking of ways that Miami can be competitive in this series.
What are the advantages they can find? It's... What's weird about the Heat, too, is they played two completely different styles of basketball in the first two rounds of the playoffs. Against Milwaukee, the scoring was insane. Jimmy was going one-on-one and scoring whenever he wanted. Round two, the shooting was bad. The defense was really good. And even though the Knicks had a top-10 offense during the regular season, they were able to take advantage of the fact that New York didn't have a lot of shooting.
It was all Jalen Brunson shot-making. That was it. That was their whole team by the end of that series.
And, you know, they were able to play these lineups with Kevin Love. They were able to play lineups with no Bam or Jimmy to start second quarters. Another thing that I don't know how realistic that is against Boston. The starting thing is going to be so interesting to me, because I agree. I think both coaches aren't going to want to rock the boat after the recent success they've had. But I think Spo will come to regret starting Love sooner than the Celtics will come to regret starting Rob Williams. You just think of the matchups. I think, let's say both teams keep their starting lineups from the most recent game. I think Love has to guard Al Horford, because I don't think the Heat want Bam on Rob Williams to, because if Rob is not involved in the pick and roll, Bam can roam a little bit. You can't cheat off Horford the way you could cheat off Rob Williams. And if Rob's, you know, coming up in the pick and roll, you can switch with Bam if you're, you know, Tatum, depending on the matchup, and kind of live with that. But I just think they kind of have to start Caleb Martin, because, you know, if you're starting Love and Strus already has to hide, right? Like, Strus is probably going to have to take the Marcus Smart matchup. And now that already leaves you, you know, who's guarding Tatum, who's guarding Brown. Jimmy will probably start on Tatum, if I had to guess. He's not really someone to hide this time of year. But if you start Caleb Martin, he can take one of those guys. It maybe gives you a position to put Jimmy off the ball. I'm fascinated to see if Spo at any point in the series. I don't think it would happen, but it'd be interesting if it happens in a fourth quarter. If you kind of go, they've been playing these smaller groups. You go something like Vincent, Lowry, Jimmy, Bam, and Caleb. Will we see Bam matched up against Jason Tatum from the start of a possession, as opposed to switching on to him at some point? That's interesting to me. But just because, if let's say they start Love, like, who's he guarding? He's guarding Al Horford. I mean, they're calling him into every screen. Like, I think that could get out of hand pretty quickly.
Yeah, I think Bam switching is a really interesting place for me to start, because I don't think Miami wants to do that a lot in this series.
They try to keep him near the rim as much as possible these days.
Right. And particularly against the Celtics, and even when the Celtics are small, like, what the Celtics will do, and they have the personnel to get away with it and execute it really well, is you get the first screen with Bam's man. He switches onto Tatum or Jalen or whoever. And then you immediately come with the second screen with whoever Max Strus is guarding or whoever Duncan Robinson is guarding. And Duncan Robinson, by the way, is fascinating because can he play in this series after being in the rotation for the first two rounds and hitting like 44% of his threes?
Right. He played in the 2020 series. The Duncan thing is crazy. His defense is so boom or bust. They play a lot of zone, particularly when Duncan's on the floor. But he was out of the playoff rotation last year. I mean, I don't know that he played a meaningful minute in this series last year. I think he came in like a couple minutes in that game seven. Like, Spo would throw him out there and be like, if he hits his first three, we'll write him out. But was not a real part of the rotation like he's been this year. I mean, can the Heat play their all bench lineup in this series? That was huge for them against New York. I don't see how they play Zeller in this series. I'd almost have Love go back to his backup five role, because at least they're both getting attacked, and at least Love spaces the floor for you.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, Zeller, like, the thing about it is also you gotta, like, protecting the rim is important in this matchup. Like, if you watch game one of the last series that the Celtics had against the Sixers when Embiid didn't play, they were just waltzing to the rim. Like, Jaylen and Tatum aren't the same players that they were in 2020. They're improved upon, I think, massively, especially Jaylen in attacking the basket and having that mentality, particularly in transition, just constantly wanting to get to the basket, get to the free throw line. So I think you need big bodies, and you need, because, like, what Miami also loves to do is help off the corners, especially the strong side corner. And,
which is, by the way, like, insane. It's not a thing most teams do.
It's a it's unorthodox for sure, and really difficult to I mean, if you ask Eric Spoelstra about it, he'll say, we're not giving up that shot. Our, like, mandate is you help at the block, and then you get out and you contest the shot, which is, like, if you've ever stood on a basketball court, you know that that's incredibly physically taxing and difficult to do against NBA shooters and their quick releases. But the Celtics can have really good shooters in both corners and just leave you really vulnerable with that strategy. So, I think that like, the Duncan question is really fascinating again. Can he play? Will they hunt him? Will he be able to hold up on defense? The zone is the zone. I think it's very smoke and mirrors against the Celtics offense, regardless who they have on the court. And to your point, like, what is the front court rotation going to look like with Love, Zeller, Bam? Like, can Bam, are they just going to die in the minutes when he's off the court? Like, how will it all shake out? I think it's just a really interesting.
I would not be surprised to see some Haywood Highsmith back up 5 minutes, and Spo's going to have a quick hook, but 4 or 5 minutes here or there just to get some defense on the floor, get some rebounding on the floor. That's going to have to be absolute patchwork the entire series, those non-Bam minutes.
I also think, like, it wouldn't surprise me at all to see, like, if you were getting really cute with the matchups, putting Bam on Smart would be really interesting to me.
Letting
him roam off Smart and, you know, forcing Smart to do things off the ball, or just, I guess, forcing the Celtics. I don't know if this is a great strategy, but forcing the Celtics to run Smart pick and rolls that involve Bam on the ball and kind of limiting, like, getting that takes the ball out of Tatum or Jaylen's hands, which is, like, okay, that's kind of a win. Smart's a really good pick and roll playmaker, and if Rob is setting the screen or Horford's setting the screen, he usually makes the right decision, but he's also super turnover prone. He's also not the scorer that Jaylen or
Tatum forcing them to do something that works, but also takes the ball a little bit away from their best players. So I thought about that, because I'm like, let's say they keep their starting lineups. You could get away-ish with hiding Strus on Horford, only because Horford is, he's shooting more from the outside at this point in his career. I don't think the Celtics are going to be like, hey, here's 6 Al Horford post-ups in a row. I think the Heat could get away with Strus on Horford. You put Kevin Love on Rob Williams and say, okay, we're going to hedge on pick and rolls, and you're going to have to be rotating you know, well. But when they do have Rob coming in on those pick and rolls, that's when you have Bam cheating off Smart, turning him into a shooter slash playmaker. That is one way that I think that their starting five could be feasible. Mm-hmm. But then even in that scenario, you're doing something like Gabe Vincent on Jaylen Brown. And I think Gabe Vincent has battled incredibly hard defensively in back-to-back rounds. You know, he got the Chris Middleton matchup. I thought Middleton did really well at times, but I don't think Vincent's there to stop anyone, but it's like you're spending every ounce of your energy making this guy work. And I think that that's been fruitful for them at times, and he has had good defensive possessions as well. But, like, that's a tough matchup. If he's guarding Jaylen Brown, it's a very tough matchup. So that's why I think they need Martin in there, who I think has been I think he's been Miami's third best player in the playoffs. It's probably him or Kyle Lowry. Lowry's been really good. I think he should be starting in this series. I just know that Spo's the kind of coach who is not going to, he's going to wait until he takes a punch before changing his starting lineup or rotation. I don't he's not the type to flinch, so to speak. But Martin has been really, really good for them, really important. He's dealing with a little bit of an injury, but he's shooting well enough. Teams are going to give him that shot. He's going to have to hit it. You know, in the couple minutes he played in this series last year, Boston ignored him from the three-point line. I think he's improved as a shooter.
Yep.
But I think he's hitting enough of those to make teams pay now. And he's been really good. Like, he's also attacking closeouts, getting shots at the rim. He's been really important for them. And defensively, he's just been hounding guys. I think he's been I think he's their, you know, obviously you have Jimmy Butler. I think outside of Jimmy, he's kind of been their best guy to throw at perimeter scorers in the playoffs.
Yeah, I love Caleb Martin. I think he can do a lot of things. His offensive rebounding, also creating second chance opportunities, is a huge plus. And when he's hitting threes, as he has in this postseason, he just adds a totally different dimension to Miami's offense. So I guess what I just think about is last year and those wide open threes where they didn't even, I just remember sitting in Miami's arena. Forgive me for not remembering what it's called these days, but I was sitting there and I just remember Grant Williams, like, clapping it, like standing basically in the paint and just not even running out to contest, literally just clapping his hands over his head for several of those threes that did not go in. They just didn't have a lot of respect for it. So if you start the series with that mentality, can Caleb Martin make you pay either by crashing the offensive glass or by hitting those shots? It'll be really interesting to see. But
I mean, he's at a career high. I mean, he's never shot this many threes in a regular season, but he's taken four threes a game in the playoffs, 39%. Shot a career-high attempts during the regular season was at 36% from three. I mean, listen, Boston's going to give him the shot, and there might be a game where he's not hitting it, but that's going to be a big inflection point, I think, in this series. He's a much better shooter than he was a year ago. I think he's a more confident shooter. He's going to have to let him fly. Like, and I'm sure Boston will be like, if that's how we go down, we'll go down to Caleb Martin threes. But that's going to be, he has to shoot him. He has to shoot him.
He'll shoot him if he's out there. And if he doesn't, then he'll get pulled probably. I think the comment you made about Kyle Lowry starting is an interesting one. He's been really good in the role that he's been playing for them off the bench. Mm-hmm. I really like those units. And I think their second most played unit in the playoffs is Jimmy, Bam, Lowry, Duncan, and Caleb. Mm-hmm. And
it's that's been a good group for them.
Yeah, it's a group that's been killer. But if you go back and watch who they've been up against in those minutes, like, no Giannis, no Middleton, Bucks. The Knicks, I don't really care who's on the court. Like, that's just, the Knicks were so putrid in that series in a lot of ways. Just unable to punish Duncan Robinson. Mm-hmm. And I just wonder how fundamentally all of it impacts Kyle Lowry's load, how many minutes he's got to play. Very physical player, not super young, and how he looks as the series goes along and what it does to his legs will be also a pretty interesting thing to keep an eye on. But he's been great. In the playoffs last year, he was like, I mean, I just recall everyone being kind of like a shell of themselves physically. Mm-hmm. In that series, and by the end it was just like such a war of attrition. But Lowry looks completely different right now than he did a year ago. Mm-hmm. And I think he's somewhat of an X factor in this series in a lot of for ways. Sure. And I expect his minutes to go potentially up a significant amount.
I think they have to go up, and I think he's going to be, he's always been important for the Heat against Boston because he has to attack drop coverage when he gets it. Like, he has to be willing to shoot the pull-up three. He has to be willing to get in the lane. He has that little turnaround jumper. I think they need him to have a level of offensive aggression. When he's playing off the ball, when Jimmy's on the floor, he's going to have to take those catch-and-shoot threes. A lot of times he pumps fake out of them. He finds a different shooter. He's going to need to be aggressive. I want to get to our picks here in a second. I just want to talk about one guy we haven't really talked about. That's Jimmy Butler, who's obviously fantastic in the first round. I think you could tell his ankle was bothering him the second half of that Knicks series. Did you see the photo of him walking into the arena for the game six in Miami? So the Heat posted a photo on their Instagram. It's like Jimmy coming into the arena. First of all, just showed up in shorts and nothing else, like no t-shirt, and was wearing like slides. That's why he went shirtless at his post-game press conference.
Bold move.
And so they post like a full body shot. He's wearing slides. One of his ankles looks like Photoshop. It's so much bigger than the other. His right ankle. It looks like, you know, remember the scene in Hitch when Will Smith has an allergic reaction? That was Jimmy Butler's ankle. It looked like he was having an allergic reaction. There's also like an Instagram video that it's getting truthered. I just use truthered for everything now. But he posted this video of him getting his like hair done on his Instagram. And he's like, oh, that hurts. And it's like he's whispering it, so you got to be listening really closely. And he's like, not the hair, the ankle. And everyone's like, oh, no. So, I mean, Jimmy's always going to make the right play. And I think he was kind of poo-pooing a little bit of the, why aren't you scoring more at the end of the series? He's like, I'm always going to make the right play. I don't consider myself a scorer. You know, the Knicks, I think, did a much more committed job of trying to get the ball out of his hands, at least compared to the Bucks. How do you think Boston defends Jimmy this series? I mean, I think they'll start with Smart on him. Do you expect them to go, hey, we're going to throw some doubles at you and get the ball out of your hands and see if the Heat shooters can make him pay? Or do you think they see Jimmy a little gimpy and they'll kind of live with one-on-one coverage?
I mean, Boston doesn't really double anyone. Unless they absolutely have to. So I don't mm-hmm. think that that'll be the strategy from the jump. They're also not so rigid in what they do that if Jimmy is like has scored 48 points and is like humiliating whoever he's guarding verbally to the point that that person feels like they should retire, they'll probably send help in that spot. But no, I think like single coverage with the bodies that they have, there's a lot of different things you can do. Like, I assume that when, and this goes to like another benefit of having Derek White come off the bench, Jimmy looks pretty comfortable with that matchup.
Last year, the guy he went after the most was White.
Right. And Derek White's a phenomenal defender, but he doesn't have the girth or the strength when Jimmy just puts his shoulder into mm-hmm. him and can just drive him backwards. So limiting the time that Jimmy has in his ability to hunt Derek White will probably play into Boston's favor a little bit. I think Malcolm Brogdon is someone who the Sixers hunted him quite a bit and had some success in series.
In Harden's big games, he was doing well against Brogdon.
Right, but I don't know. I'm personally,
I think you could live with that matchup. I mean, he's a good defender. Yeah.
I think Brogdon's fine, and I don't think you overreact too much there. I think you're right that Smart could start in that matchup, or Smart could like start on Bam for all I know, and then just try to neutralize the switch, the pick and roll, and switch when they go empty corner and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But
But yeah, I think you guard him straight up and you help off the shooters for sure. You load up a lot and you show a lot of bodies. Don't let him get to... I think the big thing with guarding Jimmy, particularly when he's not 100%, is you have to keep your hand... Like, show your hands. You can't reach.
You can't jump.
Foul him. You can't... Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You can't bite on all his fakes, which he's amazing at. One of the best... of this generation at drawing fouls and getting to the free throw line, one of his best skills. You can't do that stuff, and you can't let Miami get into the bonus and get, you know, Kyle Lowry, who's just like a magician when it comes to that stuff, like drawing fouls when his team's in the bonus and getting to the free throw line. Like, those are just like gimme points that Miami needs, frankly, to survive in this series. And so if you give that to them, you're really doing yourself a disadvantage. So I would assume that they stay, help aggressively off the three-point mm-hmm. line and force contested jumpers and don't foul, be physical, mm-hmm. but don't foul. And I think that they'll live with whatever Jimmy can make from that.
Mm-hmm. It should be noted, last year, he had a couple tough games in the series. He was dealing with a knee injury.
Mm-hmm.
I think the knee is a lot better this year. It's going to be fascinating to see how the ankle goes. I mean, he was obviously spectacular in that series, and his Game 6 and Game 7 were truly iconic performances from him. It's going to be fascinating. What's your pick?
So, when I look at it on paper...
This is already a longer answer than I wanted.
I'm sorry. When I look at it on paper, I struggle to see a way for the Heat to win a game. When I really think about the history between these two teams and the respect factor that I have for Spo, for Jimmy, for Bam, for this rejuvenated Kyle Lowry, my pick is Celtics in six. What about you?
So this Heat team is just truly one of the, like, most like comical playoff teams of all time, like negative point differential during the regular season. Smoke Milwaukee from the 3-point line. Just absolute domination offensively in that series. Come back, win a series in the mud against the New York Knicks with Jimmy not healthy. I know the Celtics should win this series. I'm riding with the Heat.
Do it.
I'm riding
Do
with
it.
The Heat
Do
for
it.
The first
Do
time.
It.
It's like,
Do
why
it.
Not?
Do it.
I'm going Heat in six. I think, listen, if there were ever a time for a coach to pull off something insane, it's like it's Spo versus Mazzulla in this series. And I think Mazzulla, like, was good in the second half of that Philly series. If anyone can just figure something out, flummox an opponent, this is where Spo's got to empty the bag of tricks. I don't know what else he has left up his sleeve. Like, I don't know what it is, but I also just, man, you know, I interviewed Bam at the start of the season, and just hearing him talk about going up against Boston in the playoffs, I literally, in the middle of the interview, I stopped and I was like, dude, I'm getting so hyped up right now. This is sick. and just...
Was that one of your five most professional moments? Or... Yeah,
absolutely.
Okay.
Good. Right up there with... Marcus Smart winning a defensive player of the year. and yeah, that's just that memory of him talking about how much he hated the color green has been seared into my mind ever since he said it. I don't know what the Heat will pull off next. Like, most teams at this point in the playoffs have an identity. They have a lineup that's really good. For the second year in a row, it's Miami's just like, on a game-to-game basis, figuring it out on the fly. And it's kind of remarkable to watch. Like, it's funny, like, we can do all this analysis, and Miami's going to do something different, like, in this next series. Like, they are going to find a way to change. Like, they haven't played the same playoff series in the first two rounds. Like, they're just a weird team. But I think we're on the same page. Like, on paper, watching the regular season, like, Boston is a better team. They're a deeper team. They have better shooting. They have more defense. But I agree. I do think at the very least it'll be a rock fight. I don't think either of these teams are going to run away with it. So I'll say Heat in six. I don't see them winning a game seven on the road. But That's what I'll say for right now. Let's move on to the Western Conference Finals, where I am so excited for this series. I know you have been generationally hating on the Lakers, and it's come back to bite you a little bit. You know, Mannix has been taking the Mannix victory lap that's coming after he was like, the Lakers are making the finals. Herring and I were like, dude, like, you need to chill. Like, we're not sure where this is coming from. He's like, no, I'm serious. And now they're one round away. You have all your eggs in the Lakers need to lose basket. This is going to be an interesting series, man. Let me start with this question. Do you think Anthony Davis can guard Nikola Jokic one-on-one? Or at least have more success? How much more success can he have than DeAndre Ayton did?
I mean, I think that Anthony Davis has been by far the best defender in these playoffs. There's no mm-hmm. real arguing that. My question is more, and this kind of dovetails out of the Warriors series, where the big strategic adjustment, the big strategic advantage seemingly that Golden State had was going small and forcing Anthony Davis to engage in pick and roll and dragging him out of the paint mm-hmm. and just kind of going mm-hmm. out of those actions and seeing what happened. Is it smart to have Anthony Davis as Nikola Jokic's primary defender when, like, in my head, I'm there's so many different ways that yep. Jokic would be ready for that. And it's like, hey,
I mean, who do you put on him? LeBron?
Well, that's okay. So that's like part B of this question, which makes it really complicated.
Yes,
but like, let's say Anthony Davis is the primary defender of Jokic. Like, Jokic's mentality is not like,
I have to score.
I have to punish Anthony Davis. Like, that's right. what he's going to be thinking.
He was having the big scoring nights against Phoenix because of the way they defended to guard him. Like, if you give him one-on-one coverage in the post, he's smart enough to go to the block every single time, get the ball, score. It was just over and over and over again. They threw one guy on him.
And, like, so that's, I could totally be wrong, but I think that doing that with Anthony Davis really opens him up to two things. One, exhaustion. Two, foul trouble. Those are really bad. And, like, just worst case scenarios for the Lakers mm-hmm. are Anthony Davis's minutes being limited in any form or fashion. He's mm-hmm. by far their most valuable player. And I just think that, like, if you have AD on Jokic, you're going to run you're going to run a ton of that pick and roll action. You
inverted.
Can invert. Mm-hmm. Yes. We're on the same page. Yeah. That's why we're brothers from another mother, Rohan. And I don't know if that necessarily utilizes Anthony Davis in the way that you need him to, where, like, anyone who's watched the Nuggets play basketball all season, like, he will hit cutters at the rim. If you're pressing up on Nikola Jokic, like, he will find all of the back cuts. He'll find all the back screens. Like, Aaron Gordon, like, LeBron James, I don't know who he's going to guard, frankly, in this series.
We saw it happen to Kevin Durant. You can't be lazy against Aaron Gordon. Like, for the Suns treated him like he couldn't shoot, and it's not like he's a knockdown guy, but he hit enough shots. And then also, like, he's sealing Kevin Durant in the paint. Obviously, LeBron has a size advantage over KD, but he's going to have to be willing to work because Gordon will screen for Jokic. Gordon is cutting. Like, he's doing all kinds of things offensively.
And they will, the Nuggets will run
yep.
you to death. The Warriors had a lot of success with that in that series when they chose to run. But, like, what separates the Nuggets from everybody else is just, like, their execution level in the half court is absurd.
It's the best of any team playing, any five people playing basketball right now. Nobody's better in the half court than the Denver Nuggets.
Right. So I think that if you choose to have AD on Jokic, that creates problems. If you choose to put AD on Gordon, which could be something that Darvin Ham wants to do, and let him roam off Aaron Gordon, then, yeah, the question then becomes, okay, so who do we put on Jokic? And is AD just, like, shading towards Jokic as his primary responsibility regardless then? So what's the point? Like, I just don't know how you stop Jokic, who, by the way, I wrote this whole feature about it, but, like, when you're guarding him, he's always moving. It's not like, when I talk about the exhaustion factor for Anthony Davis, it's like, you're not used to sprinting off screens with following this dude. Like, you're not used to coming off, like, double aways or, like, wide pin downs and just, like, defending that over and over and over again for an entire game. It's exhausting. So
being at the top of the key while Jokic initiates a pick and roll, like, you know, how many times does AD have to do that during the playoffs?
Yeah, exactly. Are you switching that? Are you fighting over a screen? Are you ducking under and giving him the jumper and then trying not to foul on the contest? Just Jokic is, in my opinion, the best player alive for a reason. So I think he just creates so many difficult matchups by himself. He's constantly adjusting in the middle of a game. He's a genius. He's efficient. He's the best passer, one of the best passers I've ever seen. He makes everyone around him better. I like him a lot.
Shows up in big games.
Hard to argue. even against this defense, this Lakers defense, which I have to give all the props to. I think that, you know, they were so locked in and took away so much of Golden State's off-ball stuff that kind of spurred the Warriors to four titles. Like, they neutralized a lot of that with their top locking and their discipline and their physicality. So, like, credit to them for sure. And they'll be as ready as they can be watching the film of, you know, what we want to take away from Denver's offense. But so what makes it so difficult to game plan for, and this is something that Joe Mazzulla told me for that story, is like, there's just so many different ways that they can use Jokic that you can't really prepare for it. So you just kind of got to, like, defend on the fly, and it's seemingly random, but it's not to them, because these guys have been together for years,
right,
and their chemistry and their continuity really shows when they're trying to put the ball in the basket.
I think it was after game 7, I think TNT was interviewing Jamal Murray, and they were like, what's the most fun part about playing with Jokic? I bet his teammates honestly are getting a little sick of that question. But Jamal did say, he's like, everyone on the team is so unselfish. And it's a great point because, like you said, it seems random, but they just have such great chemistry. It's like people, like, the ball moves in such a way that it just does not for other offenses. Like you said, like, Jokic isn't never looking for his own shot unless it's the best percentage play for the Nuggets. Like, against the Suns, again, he was getting so much single coverage, especially in the post, that he was like, I guess they want me to keep shooting. Like, that's the best look for our offense. That's what I'm going to keep doing. I do think the Nuggets can have some success offensively in the series in a way Golden State was not able to. They have more shooting. They're just better executing in the half court. I do think AD will start on Jokic. I think it's going to be too complicated if they go with other matchups, because Jokic is immediately going to go to the block. If it's LeBron, you can't have LeBron getting in foul trouble. If it's Vando, you can't go single coverage. Jokic will get to the rim every single time. Then you're going to invite doubles, and teams are hesitant to double Joker because of how good he is as a passer. I think we're going to see a lot of Joker at the top of the key. Jamal screening for him, Aaron Gordon screening for him. They have to make AD work in this series, but conversely, the Lakers are going to have to make the Nuggets work, and Jokic is going to have to guard AD. And I don't think that will be an easy matchup for him on multiple levels. On the offensive boards, it's going to be a lot tougher than someone like Ayton. How do you see the Lakers attacking this Nuggets defense? I feel so. Who do you think the Lakers start in game one, and how do you think they're attacking the Nuggets defense?
The Lakers have...
I think
really
Schroeder's got to start.
Okay. I don't know, because, I mean, it goes back to, like, the question of just how you're going to defend them. And
yeah.
sometimes it's like, if you're the Lakers, it's like our strength is our identity is defense. And mm-hmm. I understand that they had to do what they had to do in game six to close that out. That was very predictable to adjust to Golden State downsizing. And Schroeder has played phenomenally and has been maybe their third best player over the past few weeks. But I don't know who they. I think that's a really good question that I haven't mm-hmm. really pondered too hard, because being small against Jokic, just like I don't know. I just don't think that that serves you yeah. an advantage. Like, and I think like when they play Gordon at the five, that's maybe the time to play speedier guys. And
I'm just thinking of who's going to pick. I guess you put Reeves on Jamal. I just think it's that's going to be a lot of Reeves has to work a ton again. And we saw him have a little bit of up and down play chasing Stephen around too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, could you get away with Schroeder over Russell and then you still start Vando? We haven't seen that look a ton.
No, I don't think I don't think you bench Russell, because he might check out. I don't know. Like, that's just kind of who he's been in his career. They need him to be supremely confident in this series offensively for them to – they, like, need him to hit shots. The Lakers have needed him to hit shots to prevail, which is part of the reason why I've been so down on them. but
Russell's been good.
He's hit shots.
Yeah. Fair,
I'll say that. He's hit shots. Yeah. But I do think, like, the question of Denver's defense when the Lakers are on offense, like, that is a side of the ball that is fascinating. And I don't think, like, after watching this past series where... I could see LeBron and Davis like licking their lips at the fact that there's zero rim protection. Like Draymond is not in this series. Looney's mm-hmm. not in this series. Like, aggressive Anthony Davis is like, yeah, I don't think that Jokic is going to be able to stop that. Frankly, I think it's a group effort for sure. I wonder if you even issue like all of your pick and roll playmaking that would let Jokic be up to touch and rely on low man help to just give the ball to AD in the post, like, and have that be the action that starts right. the play and just go at Jokic like from there. I don't know.
AD can really make him work, and it's not like giving Ayton the ball on the block. Like, you have to respect AD face up, going to the rim. Like, that just one-on-one matchup is going to be way more difficult for Jokic than it ever was with Ayton.
I think they'll double a ton. They'll show so much help.
Mm-hmm.
They have really smart help defenders who can dig and recover and rotate from different angles. And, I think this could be a Bruce Brown series instead of a Michael Porter Jr. series.
I was going to say, I think this is going to be a big moment for that group, the Brown, KCP, Jamal, Gordon, mm-hmm. Jokic group, because the Lakers play a lot of three-guard lineups. And Brown it was like pick and roll operating in game seven. He's been really good on both ends of the floor after you made fun of me for saying it was my favorite offseason signing of the summer.
I definitely don't remember making fun of you, because I liked that pick as well.
I think I said it was the best offseason move
I can't remember.
That was a lot of masala from me, but I stand by it.
Yeah, I mean, did Bruce Brown win Sixth Man of the Year? Did anyone else win Sixth Man of the Year? Who was traded?
Another Boston media mafia campaign.
No, it's just that's just a fact of the matter. You know, we got to keep stick to facts here. They matter.
Was Marcus Smart even like on the Defensive Player of the Year drop down menu this year?
Or he did crack it.
Yeah. Did people realize it was such a fraudulent gift that they said never again?
I'm honestly surprised that Bam Adebayo came out of his living room after the Defensive Player of the Year was announced. Like, just a lot of hurt in his eyes and in his voice leading up to that finalist announcement.
I think Bam, like a lot of us, appreciates a free and fair election. That one that's been decided in a back room by four people from Boston. You know what I mean?
That's not a real thing.
I appreciate Bam not only for being the best defensive player in the NBA, but standing up for democracy.
All jokes aside, I love Bam. I think he's amazing. I have nothing bad to say about him. No, I think that, you know, I guess I focus a lot in this series on how to stop Jokic. And I just think that they'll figure it out on the defensive end. And that's kind of like my fundamental rationale for loving the Denver Nuggets. It's like, hey, you can't stop them when they have the ball, period. So I'm going to start there. And then defensively, if they're just average, which they've been pretty better than average on the defensive end in these playoffs, but like if they're just average, they'll probably win. Or if the game is close, I trust Jokic and crunch time over pretty much everybody in the NBA.
Right.
So,
and this is the first time the Lakers will have played a team. The Warriors just didn't have enough depth. Like they ran out of answers quickly, especially with how bad Jordan Poole was. And like I'm sorry, like KCP, it would be shocking if he played as bad as Klay Thompson did in the last round. Like KCP would have to play way worse than he's playing now to be as bad as Klay was in that last round. Like his decision making is going to be better, his shot making is probably going to be better. Like that's how rough it was for Klay Thompson. Like, not only do the Nuggets have like steadier guys, and I think Golden State and especially Memphis had, they don't have like black holes who are killing the team. Like, yes, they're not as good when Jokic is off the floor, but it's not because those guys are terrible. Like, it's just Jokic is that good. And the Lakers don't exactly have like great backup options behind AD as well, which I think will help those Nuggets bench units a little bit. But yeah, I'm interested to see how the Lakers have to do when there's not like, you know, I will say this for the Lakers. Their depth, which I was with you at the trade deadline. I didn't think this was going to move the needle for them. I liked that they made the move. I liked that it made them more competent. I thought they should have been competing for the playoffs. I didn't think they'd built a conference finals team when they made those moves. And yet their role players are, as high as I am on Denver's guys, like Christian Brown even had some good minutes in that last series. Like, what if there's a Hachimura game? Like Lonnie Walker changing the course of history with that fourth quarter, like you can't predict that, but the Lakers have had some like game changing series swinging performances from their rotation players. And I you can't predict it, but you can't discount it either.
No, you're exactly right. No one had Rui Hachimura turning into Reggie Miller before game right. one or game two, whenever that was in the first round. No one had Lonnie Walker just, yeah, tilting that series in LA's direction when that was such a, like, that game had Warriors written all over it.
Bro, he was hitting pull-up middies, like, over Steph. Like, it was one of the most shocking things I'd ever seen.
His confidence factor was, like, through the roof. I remember there was one play where AD was just calling for the ball in the post, and Lonnie Walker just looked him off like, I'm Michael Jordan, like, get familiar. And then he like airballed the jumper. And I was
there it is.
Yeah, we're back
the
to
wheels
earth.
Have and come then, off. Yeah.
Yeah, and it was just like the next like three straight possessions, it was like Lonnie Walker dunk, Lonnie Walker pull up.
He did the LeBron deluxe album mean. He was like, here go two more for y'all. That was Lonnie Walker after the airball.
But no, like, I think that I personally, like, the way I see it, I don't give Rob Pelinka a ton of credit for the trade deadline because it's like, what? No, I forget who said this, but it's like a perfect analogy. If I set my house on fire and then I call the fire department and they put out the fire, should I be the hero of that narrative?
No, because that's a bad analogy.
How is it?
Because Pelinka set the house on fire,
yeah,
but then he got the fire extinguisher himself and put it out, is what happened. You can't say
he started the fire.
But then he put it out.
After 2 years. Like, I mean, LeBron, they wasted years of what LeBron and AD could have done. Like,
so I'll say I think the best coaching job Eric Spoelstra's ever done was when he went 30-11 with Deion Waiters, Goran Dragic, Luke Babbitt, James Johnson.
Before you go on.
But they started that season 11-30.
I know. Before you go on, I just want you to know that I've known you a few years now. I think you've said that season is your favorite Spo season like 57 times. I just want you to know that. I don't know if it was in private or on the pod, but this is a take of yours that if
30-11, Luke Babbitt was starting games.
This is known. This is a known thing. It was amazing. Can we please move on? Like, it was great. We love it. Okay, Spo's the best coach.
I need to move on. Oh, don't get me started.
No, it's like, again, I don't think they made the playoffs that year. As a matter of fact, I know that they didn't.
Dude, don't get me started. If Joey Mazz had pulled that off, they'd be, oh my God. The number of, like, this is just like what Red did in 82, and he smoked a cigar in someone's face, and, like, you'd have to, you know, dust off Bob Ryan and have him give some kind of historical context. Some other Boston media member would have to come on this podcast and mispronounce a bunch of people's names.
Jeez.
Maybe do an accent or two. Anyway, let's focus here. I do think this is going to be a fascinating series. I think we're both leading Nuggets here. Let's be honest. Let's also briefly discuss Nikola Jokic, because you and I, history will prove to show that you and I were right the whole time about him. And we've been texting throughout this year about just how much every night we need a big Jokic game. And he's delivered pretty much every night. Look, he needs this run. I think they've answered a lot of the questions about him, but, like, we cannot sit here and deny that going to the finals as opposed to the conference finals is going to be a major game changer for him and how people look at the MVPs he's won, which I think are unfairly the question of a lot of people, unfairly kind of criticized. Dude, he's been, you know, maybe it was Jimmy for a little bit. Steph had a nice couple games. Tatum has 51. No one is playing better than Jokic right now. Like, he made it further than both the other MVP finalists. He's outplayed them both in, like, incredibly well. It's not like he's gone up against easy competition. Yes, the Suns were hurt. They had two top 10-ish guys. He's been unbelievable. And it's just, again, we're both on the same page. Like, it's a regular season award. It's just been so funny to see the people kind of rail about the playoffs and his lack of playoff success and his defense, etc. It's just like the anti-Jokic narratives have been crumbling, and they've been crumbling quickly.
Yeah, he's the best player alive. I think he has been all season. I would take him in a 7-game series over anyone. I don't care. I think that a lot of the support for anyone else in this conversation is because you've seen them do it before, and I understand that. I understand thinking that way. If you've seen someone have a huge game in the finals, I mean, Giannis is the player who I'm obviously talking about here. I would just say that I think Jokic is like offensively, I don't think that it's very close when it comes to anyone in this dude, like, and that's been borne out in this postseason, and he still has never played a minute with an all-star as a teammate, and his team is in first place, and his team has destroyed everyone they've gone up against in this run. And he leads the postseason in assist rate, and he leads the postseason in PER, and all the advanced numbers that he led the regular season with, he leads the postseason in. He's just amazing. He had like a, what was the stat line that he had in their loss because Devin Booker missed zero shots?
53-point game, like 53-11 and something. Like,
yeah, just like he's I don't even know what else to say about him as a scorer, as a passer.
No one else could put up 50 and it not be talked about in the way Jokic did. 53 points, 4 rebounds, 11 assists. Like,
that was 20 of 30 shooting. 20 of 30 shooting.
That game was, he shot 59% in the second round. Like, he was insane, dude.
He had 32, 10, and 12 on 13 of 18 shooting in the blowout win in game six. That's an elimination game on the road. And yeah, he, like, could have played 20 minutes in that game, like, because of the score and the margin. If it was more competitive, his numbers would have been even better. He was a plus 28 in that game. I don't know. Like, anyway, like, I just think he's the best. I think that the way he can be attacked defensively, I think he's like played his ass off on that end. He's really trying. He's super smart on that side of the ball too, and frankly doesn't get the credit he deserves for it. People were making fun of the fact that Denver, when people would say, oh, Denver has a top five defense when he's on the court this season, and like people would just ignore that for whatever reason. I don't understand why. It's like numbers to show us things that we can learn from, and it's hard to argue with numbers. So I don't know. Like, he executes their scheme. He's not as versatile as other players on the defensive end. Not a great rim protector. It's like, no player is perfect. But, like, at the end of the day, the way I always view it is, like, the name of the game is to score more points than your opponent. Mm-hmm. It's not to stop your opponent from scoring. Defense is super important. But, like, through a 48-minute game, this person gives you the best chance of scoring more points than your opponent. That's all that matters. So yeah, he creates a great shot on every possession, even when he doesn't touch the ball. He's amazing. We've never seen someone like this, ever. So I just wish he was appreciated a little bit more, and people can say he's won two MVPs. So he's been appreciated enough, and I'm out of my mind for thinking he's been disrespected, all this, but like, I don't know. Like, I thought he was by far the MVP this season. If you voted for Embiid, that's fine. If you voted for Giannis, that's fine. I think that a lot of the reason for not voting him MVP had to do with past stuff. That either him not getting to the finals, which, by the way, like, has Joel Embiid gotten out of the second round? He has not. So, yeah, I don't know. He's the best. I'm glad he's played as well as he has. It's not very surprising to me. And I look forward to watching him as far as he goes in this postseason, and I think the conference finals will be awesome. The Western Conference Finals.
Yeah. It's just been incredibly satisfying to watch him dominate. What's your pick for this series?
I'm picking Nuggets
in a sweep, or
no, I can't go sweep because for a variety of reasons. I honestly have too much respect for AD and for LeBron. I thought, you know, throughout this postseason, I was a little miffed by LeBron's engagement on both ends, and didn't really understand the pacing narrative that took shape. And I thought it was okay to just say when someone, you know, outside the context of he's 38 years old and he's playing on a bad foot, it's like, at the end of the day, he's competing against other players, so you have to measure his performance against the competition, not what he used to be, or have these caveats of, this is so great because no one's ever done this before. Like, that is true, but it's also irrelevant at the end of the day. But, and I thought he has struggled at times, and it's okay to say so, but like, in game six, like, the way he came out was amazing. Like, he, I bet Andrew Wiggins really is upset that it leaked that he had a rib thing going on, because LeBron was just like, I am overpowering you in this one-on-one matchup over and over. I'm going to relentlessly attack. And there are moments where LeBron is like spellbinding, like in transition. The fact that he's been left alone sometimes on the weak side, and he'll just like back cut you. And he had that reverse dunk against, I think, the Grizzlies when Dylan Brooks was just like, I'm going to be at the nail helping and I don't care about LeBron. So plays like that are just, they are what they are. I mean, his buzzer beater to send game, whatever it was, into overtime against the Grizzlies was like an all-timer. Like, I don't know how many players can hit a layup like that over Jaren Jackson Jr. Like, it's just, he's amazing. So
they've had two massive game four wins in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So I have a ton of respect for him. I think Austin Reeves is a really good player. And his contract situation will be very interesting.
Are you ready for him to get 4 years, $99 million in the offseason?
I'm ready for the Houston Rockets to just throw the max at him. That's what I'm ready for. I can't wait for it to
happen.
Well,
how do you think, what early look ahead to the Rockets, what do you think of Ime, Austin Reeves, and Jaylen Brown? Like, what can that core get you next season?
My guy, I can't with... Come on. Like, this has got to stop. Like, he qualified for the Supermax.
I woke up one day and I logged onto theringer.com.
Yes.
And on that website, just read about how much Jaylen Brown hated the city of Boston. So I don't know why it's so ridiculous of me to wonder if he might want out and play with the coach that he loved.
You know, $260 million to live in one of the best cities in America for the next 5-6 years. It's like, who would beat that? It's tough. So I think they're fine. I don't think he's going to go to the Houston Rockets.
You know, I would like to see the championship odds on Reeves, Harden, and Jaylen Brown together, because that's a formidable trio right there.
All NBA player, Jaylen Brown, second team. I think so. My pick for this series is Nuggets and six, to make a short story long.
Yeah. I'll go Nuggets and seven. I'll say they'll close out at home. It's going to be a very interesting series. My last question for you is, do you think there's a sneaky argument to Miami Vice being Michael Mann's best movie? Yes or no?
There is no argument.
None whatsoever?
No.
Not even when that nightclub scene starts with Numb Encore, you weren't like, this is so lit.
I mean, I saw that in theaters, and it was a great moment. It was sick.
I saw it again Saturday night at my home, the first night without basketball in a month, and I was like, this is absolute cinema. When Colin Farrell says he's a fiend for mojitos, that was iconic.
It's a great film. I enjoy it. I hope Jamie Foxx gets better. Wish him well.
Yes.
The King, one of the greatest actors of all time.
Just one of the most talented people to ever do anything.
Yes, that is true. I want to see him do a Doc Rivers impersonation tomorrow. But no, like, I'm sorry. Michael Mann directed Heat. What are we doing? Come on. Collateral's better. Collateral, like, I could go down the list. Like, there's just so many.
I should have said Collateral, because I actually like that movie more. Heat's a little long. Heat can be a little long. I'm looking for a Michael Mann movie to watch, I'm going to Collateral and Miami Vice first. That's all I'm going to say. Don't sleep on Black Hat. Don't sleep on Black Hat. On that note, Mike, that'll do it for today's episode. Everyone, please be sure to continue to read Mike's work over at The Ringer. Looking forward to the ways he's going to find to hate on the Lakers in this upcoming round. Until the next episode, everyone, please continue to enjoy the NBA postseason.
It's time to get the world talking about Black-led brands. We all have our favorites, our ride or dies, and ones we can count on to help us live our best lives. But we can't keep them all to ourselves. So if you're feeling like a Black Opal beauty, tell somebody. If the lip bar gives you a lip for every drip, let them know. And if your hair is doing the do, shout that out too, because one shout out leads to another, and almost half of Black-led brands are discovered by word of mouth. Join Walmart in shouting out your favorite Black-led products, creating a new world of choices at walmart.com/blackandunlimited.